Hi guys, this is Greg Knox, co-host of a Lament Configuration Horror podcast. I have a question for you. Have you ever been on a date, and the date was going really well, so you went back to your place to try and seal the deal, and you wanted Netflix and chill, so you put on a movie, and then afterwards the date just went completely downhill? Now, it could be that the movie you put on was too disturbing, it was too violent, too gory, too depressing, too brutal, too upsetting, too uncomfortable, too controversial, or just too fucking weird for your date to deal with, so they left and they didn't speak to you ever again. Do you want to prevent this happening again next time? Well, I've got just the show for you. Welcome to the show. These are the worst date movies ever. My name is Greg Knox, and I'm joined by Tom Dennett Cook.
Hi, Greg.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed our date.
Yeah. It was a very special date that I took you on, as we'll go into when we talk about the film itself. So this is the very, very first episode of Worst Date Movies Ever. If you're listening to us, well, wherever you're listening to us, be it on iTunes or Spotify or YouTube or whatever, feel free to subscribe to all our great content that's coming up very, very soon. Lots of great sort of worst date movies ever to talk about. So the film that we both watched just now and we're going to talk about for the episode today is Cannibal Holocaust.
Hooray!
Hooray! A great date movie, as I'm sure you all agree. Now, because we're talking about Cannibal Holocaust, and as anyone who knows anything about Cannibal Holocaust will know, it's pretty violent and it's pretty shocking. So if you're likely to be offended by Cannibal Holocaust, please feel free to press stop right now. And also, we're going to be talking about the film in some great depth, so there will be spoilers. So if you don't want to know what happens in Cannibal Holocaust, please, again, watch the film and then come back.
Yeah.
Obviously, coming back is the most important bit. We definitely need to do that. So, Tom, what is the synopsis, or indeed, what is the story of Cannibal Holocaust for those who don't know, for whatever reason?
I suppose, in a nutshell, the easiest way to describe it is... some explorers have gone into the Amazon. They have gone missing. The film is a collection, really, of their footage being put together by, I guess, a TV film company is trying to say, hey, let's put this documentary together. And the man responsible for finding the footage is like, seriously, you do not want to show this on TV. And they're like, why not? And you basically get to watch the footage.
Yes. So this, just for a quick introduction of the film. So this film is directed by Ruggero Deodato. This is his most famous film by far. He's also the director of A House on the Edge of the Park, which is a rape revenge film starring David Hess, which is quite good.
Good old David Hess.
Yes.
Never lets you down, does he?
He's the sleaziest man in the entire world. And but this, believe it or not, is not Deodato's first cannibal movie. He had a previous cannibal film called Jungle Holocaust, or indeed Last Cannibal World. It's one of those films that's got about three different titles. And it's one of my favourite Italian horror movies.
Yeah.
Would you agree? Is it one of your favourite Italian horror movies, Tom?
It's one of, I think, not only one of my favourite Italian horror movies, I think it's got to be in the top 10 most effective movies. Not necessarily saying I enjoy it, but I don't think you're supposed to. And I think the film is very good at what it does. So it's one of those films I say you have to watch, as because without this film there's so many other types of films that would not have come into existence, so it's a very important film, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, this is like the fifth or sixth time that I've seen it, so I kind of enjoy it probably more than you're meant to.
You know what, this is the first time I've watched it with somebody else.
Oh, wow.
Always watched it on my own and I didn't find it as bad, so as a date movie it might work, because it doesn't work as a solitary movie. Whenever I watch this on my own, I'm always like at the end so disheveled and my soul is destroyed, and watching it with you was just like, okay, I don't feel so bad because someone else is going through this.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone who knows me, this is, believe it or not, not the first time that I've discussed this film on a podcast. And you might think, well, why are you talking about this again, Greg? Like, you've already, this is covering old ground. And it's like, well, no, I love it so much.
There's many different ways to talk about it.
Yeah, and I just, really, really wanted to do it as the first episode because, yeah, it's so notorious. I mean, I love the film. I mean, just talk quickly about sort of why I love it so much. So, yeah, mm-hmm. it's very powerful. It's very effective at what it does, as you say. And there are very, very many reasons for that. And it's quite interesting because, now, have you seen any other cannibal films?
I've seen a few. I'm not huge on cannibal films, I'll be honest, but in comparison, I think it's the best. Well, I think that goes without saying. But.
Yeah, it kind of goes without saying. So if you compare this with something like, I don't know, Cannibal Ferox, mm-hmm. Matt the Cannibal God, all those video nasties that I talked about on the other show, basically all those kind of films, even something more modern like The Green Inferno, mm-hmm. everyone's favourite. yeah, which incidentally, for anyone who doesn't know, took its name from the working title for this film.
Mm-hmm. They didn't mention Green Inferno about seven times in this film. So,
I think literally in the first minute, it's like, they went off to the Green Inferno.
Like I said, that's the best bit about Eli Roth's film is calling it the Green Inferno.
Yeah. I think what this has compared to all the others is all the others are all very, very standard sort of bunch of people go to the jungle and they get killed by cannibals.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the sole plot of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that happens in this as well, but that is only part of the film. If that makes sense. So
it definitely say that
the narrative device in this, it's more about the professor character. So the professor character trying to find this footage that the documentary crew shot and then him bringing it back and then showing it to these ridiculous TV executives.
these absolute amoral monsters who don't care.
Yeah.
But you know what?
I'm really blasé about everything.
I'm glad you mentioned about the social commentary.
Yes.
Because it's very easy to dismiss cannibal films as a subgenre, simply because most of them are a bunch of people going to the woods getting by cannibals. This film stands out. I mean, it's not necessarily the first cannibal film, but it's definitely the one that other ones try and mimic. In a similar vein, you've got, like, say, Dawn of the Dead, which is a zombie film, and many films have tried to rip off Dawn of the Dead, but they just end up being films where people get killed by zombies.
Yeah.
Whereas Dawn of the Dead equally has social commentary. So you have, in a way, Cannibal Holocaust and Dawn of the Dead both being held up as these great films where people get eaten by other people. But there's more to it than that. And that's why this film stands out by far.
Yeah. So this is the first example of a found footage film.
Now, that's another thing, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so literally the whole found footage conceit, as far as I'm aware, I don't remember it coming up at any point other than this, did not exist before Cannibal Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
So all those lovely fan footage films that we get nowadays that cost about £5 and like make millions at the box office and are all shit, you can thank this film for basically those existing.
Yeah.
In fact, there are actually a lot of fan footage cliches that exist in this film. I pointed this out on the Lament Configuration when we covered this. This is the first film where you've got a character asking another camera to stop filming. Turn the camera off.
Turn the camera off. Stop filming.
Literally, that happens in every single fan footage film.
People filming no matter what. Like, even if they're in mid-fight, you can see fists flying through the air. The camera is still rolling in the other hand.
Yeah, no. Or like, I mean, near the end is the great example.
Yeah.
I mean, you even pointed this out when we were watching this. It's like, if it was real life, you would just run away.
Yeah, you? Nobody is staying there and filming this.
Yes, I'm going to film this person getting beheaded and his penis cut off and
raped. Just like, even when they're like, one of them's just been dragged away. I won't say when this happens, but one of them's getting dragged away and now's the perfect time to run away. But instead, they decide to literally hide around the corner. Like, they're about as far away, like less than a couple of meters filming what's happening. And then they're surprised when they get caught next. It's like, well, you didn't make any effort to run away, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It could have run away and they just didn't and they just got killed.
But of course, at this stage, then these aren't cliches. This, as you say, this is the first time. So,
yes. Now, what this has over the other cannibal films, as I said, it's much better shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's much better edited. The editing in this film is absolutely awesome. It's Vincenzo Tomasi, who is Lucio Fulci's regular editor. The editing in this film is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do, which is really clever, is because obviously found footage doesn't exist at this point. So what they do, when they're shooting the found footage bits, where you've got the gore happening and all the special effects, they edit it in such a way that you don't notice that it's been edited. And I've always found that really clever about this film.
Yeah.
So it's really weird that I'm talking about the filmmaking in a film called Cannibal Holocaust.
You know what?
But
in a way, when you were given the warning about if you're easily offended, I was like, with a title like Cannibal Holocaust, people were going to figure that out themselves.
It's a great title.
Yeah, a title like that is just like, yeah, it's going to be offensive.
Yeah, it's the archetypal, sound like Mark Kermode there for a second, it's the archetypal sort of cannibal film title, because Cannibal Ferox, no one knows what Ferox actually
means. I'll be honest, I don't know what Ferox means.
I've reviewed the fucking film and I don't know what a Ferox is, but Cannibal Holocaust, it's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's got its perfect title.
The title is,
encapsulates everything that the film's about.
You're being attacked by the film before you've even started watching it. The title is just like, ouch. Yeah.
And what I like about this is it actually has the proper fan footage conceit. It's not one of those like you get nowadays where have they found the footage?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a film that's been made in the style of a fan footage film, and there's no actual reason why it has. It just is. Whereas in this, the film is basically split in two. So the first half of the film, you've got the professor trying to find kind of what happened to the crew, finding the footage, and then the second half is basically the footage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite interesting. Whereas even in Blair Witch, which is kind of the first main kind of fan footage film that came after this, you don't see the first bit, it's all the second bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought it was quite interesting that they did that. I mean, obviously it kind of makes more sense. I prefer the second half of the film to the first half. The first half is necessary because of the story, but the second half is more action-packed.
I suppose it's going to sound weird. Neither of those points.
Oh, wow.
I like, there's a sort of bit, maybe two-thirds, probably around about halfway through those 2 points. Because for the first half of the film, you're led to believe these explorers are, I guess, nice people, or at least average people.
Yeah.
Or opportunists. Yes, they sometimes take liberties when filmmaking, but you don't know how much. And as the film goes on, and you basically realize that they're massive assholes. So the first half of the film leads you into feeling almost sorry for them. Like, what's happened to them? Something horrible has happened to these adventurers, explorers. And then as the film goes on, you're like, actually, it turns out they're horrible people. And you start to, you obviously stop sympathizing for them. And then it just spirals downwards and downwards into this horrible macabre. So yes, the second half is action-packed, but the first half, I guess what you don't get with other fan footage films is that sort of contrast. So the first half of this builds them up as nice people. What's happened to them? What horrible things have happened to them at the hands of these horrible savages? And then the second half is just actually, you know, we'll flip it the other way around and you get to see who these people really are, what they really did. And then they get their comeuppance, I guess.
Yeah, although it's interesting because even though they are horrible people, and there are several examples of them being horrible throughout the film, when I've watched this film, admittedly, through repetition, you do kind of get desensitized to a lot of this, hence me saying watch this about 6 times now. When they actually do get their comeuppance, so to speak, it is very affecting because it's so brutal. And the use of music is really good. I love the music in this film so much.
The music in this film is incredible.
Yeah, it's Riz Ortolani. It's his most well-known score, at least the one that I'm aware of anyway. It adds so much to the film. Again,
I find the music is eerie. As opposed, at no point is the music shocking. You know, in most, for the lack of a better term, let's call it a horror movie, to keep things simple. There is no sudden shocking music. When something horrible happens, it kicks into the nice, calm music that you've been hearing for the most part of the film, which is more disturbing. It just kind of, it's like a weird, wide awake nightmare.
Yeah, and it's not just the main theme. I mean, the main theme is very ethereal, it's very beautiful, and it's very very misleading, because the film starts and you hear this really nice, gentle sort of guitar sort of strumming and all that kind of stuff. And they use it really well in the film. It's like a juxtaposition to the violence of what's going on, isn't it? But they also use a lot of the boom.
I was going to say, I don't know what you want to call it, but that boom. That's more just, I don't know what you would call that. Not sinister, but sad. The music's more sad than
melancholy.
Melancholy.
I like that word.
That melancholy music. So you've either got the ethereal, good word, happy music, which when put against a violent scene, it just messes with your mind. Or you've got the melancholy music, which just pulls you down. I find this film is more depressing than shocking.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. And I like the use of the synth sort of in the kind of last 10 minutes or so as well. So it's not just the strings, and it's not just the sort of acoustic guitar, and it's not just the boom.
Italians love their synth, don't they?
Yes,
the amount of these sorts of films I'm watching, there's a lot of synth going on.
They like their funk as well. Yeah. There's a bit near the beginning where there's definitely some funky bass going on. Yeah. In there. It's not quite the same as Cannibal Ferox. In Cannibal Ferox, there's some proper funky shit going on, like, on the soundtrack.
As I'm not as familiar with cannibal films as you, do other films ever just go for straightforward drumming or anything like that?
Well, even in this film, that you mean like the tribal drumming?
Tribal drumming, yeah.
There's some tribal drumming in
this. You would assume there'd be more of that in cannibal films.
Yeah, certain films. In Cannibal Ferox, from what I remember, there is definitely some scenes where there's definitely tribal drumming going on, mm-hmm. sort of on the score. Because it's Umberto Lenzi, and Lenzi's a bit more sort of fuck yous. He's a bit, like, unsubtle. He's just kind of, just throw all the shit out there. Don't care, you know, blah, 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 blah. Now, it's interesting that I brought up Riz Ortolani, because Riz Ortolani did the score for Mondo Carne,
uh-huh.
which you've seen.
Which I kind of like, to
yes.
be honest.
Now, yeah. This is quite interesting, because a lot of these early cannibal films from the 80s, or particularly this one mm-hmm. anyway, I mean, Mountain of the Cannibal God, maybe not so much, apart from the sort of animal footage, which we're going to come on to in a minute. But it's quite interesting. So this is very heavily inspired by a film like Mondo Carne in different ways. So for anyone who hasn't seen Mondo Carne, I mean, do you agree with that necessarily?
I do. What I would say is the whole Mondo subgenre that kind of led into the cannibal films. So the Mondo subgenre mixes a lot of real footage with fake footage.
Yes.
To create mockumentaries. Mm. Not in the same way that this is. As you say, this is more of a found footage film.
Yeah.
But the Mondo subgenre is basically not quite mockumentaries, because a lot in the early ones, they tried to present it as completely real.
Yeah.
It's basically reality TV.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
It really is.
It's real, but it's also fake. But who cares if it's fake, because it's real people being fake. But yeah, Mondo Carne has a lot of actual animal torture, but then some fake animal torture.
Mm.
And then it's very difficult to sort of... It blurs the line quite well. Obviously, a lot of these early films, the Mondo films, they have what I would call a sort of Indiana Jones-esque sort of colonial adventurist. I'm going to go into the jungle, or I'm going to go travel around the world and see all these different bizarre cultures doing bizarre things.
Yes.
And that push to the extreme, that will lead to a film eventually like Cannibal Holocaust, and then just go straight into the cannibal genre without caring so much anymore about real footage.
Or Faces of Death.
Or Faces of Death, yeah.
Which is the same thing.
Yeah.
Because again, that's sort of a mixture of real and fake. And the idea is it's all real. So if you see this animal dying for real,
mm-hmm.
therefore everything else that happens in the film must therefore be real too. And there's an example of that in this film, which is so in the film, they find the footage, and at the studio where they're deliberating on whether to show said footage, they show the professor a previous film that allegedly the film crew made,
mm-hmm.
which is called The Last Road to Hell. And now, The Last Road to Hell, the footage used for that is real.
Yeah, this is what we're talking. Yeah, go on, yeah.
So this is, now I always get this word wrong because it's a very, very complicated word. It's verisimilitude, which is basically where it's basically everything made to feel real,
mm-hmm.
because you've got this execution footage, which is real.
Yeah.
But it's presented in a way which is not real, because apparently this film crew made this documentary, which they didn't. But then you've got the animal cruelty, which is real. And therefore, if the animals are really being killed, therefore the people must also be really being killed as well, if that makes sense.
Yes.
It's a bit like Inception. It's like layers, like an onion.
So just for my own peace of mind. So the video footage that is in Road to Hell, like the little mini documentary within the film, that is real footage that they've used, right? Like, they've just taken some stock footage from Vietnam and various civil wars in Africa.
Yeah.
But then in Cannibal Holocaust, they say... Holocaust. They say...
American.
I don't know why I went American there. They say, oh, that footage is fake.
Yes.
Even though it's real.
Yes.
And then of course, the animal killing that happened in the film, they're also real. But then various other, all the other stuff that happens is fake. And because of that mixture of stuff, you don't know where one thing begins and ends, really, in terms of fake and real.
Yeah, exactly. Which is probably why in Italy, when this came out, people actually thought it was a genuine snuff movie.
Well, yeah, I mean,
why wouldn't you?
And particularly, like the only thing that might put you off, you might go, well, this professor and all this stuff with the TV executives watching the footage, that can't be, that's obviously, that's not real. Obviously, those are actors, you know, unless it's like WWE style where there's just always a camera everywhere. You kind of go, okay, so obviously it's fake because of this. But then at the end, they had the little thing saying that the projectionist has stolen the footage and made a little fake film. Using the real footage, because then you're like, well, I don't know what to think.
Yeah,
that kind of explains that kind. They tie it up so well in this film. They tie it up very well.
That's kind of like a whole. This is based on a true story. Or this is based on actual events, which is like, yeah.
And okay. What I like when you go back and rewatch it. So, for example, when the professor's at the beginning, just looking for them in the jungle, and then he comes across the massive shell. You think nothing of it the first time you watch it. It's just very true. Jungle debris. It's just he's come across something. But then when you later on in the film discover how that happened, and then you just kind of cast your mind back. It's just so well constructed. There's so many loops in this film that link together. And as you say, documentaries within films, which are within studio executives talking about a documentary.
Yeah.
A lot going on.
Which, again, I like Cannibal Ferox. I'm not using Cannibal Holocaust to beat on Cannibal Ferox because it is enjoyable for what it is. Mm-hmm. But you don't get this level of kind of subtext in a film like that.
You know, yeah. As you said, very Inception style. Yeah. Like, this film doesn't need to be this clever. You know, most people remember the animal killings and things like that.
Yes.
But there's so much more going on.
Yeah. So I think this is a very underrated film in a lot of ways, because I think a lot of people, and look, don't get me wrong, I think very justifiably so, focus mainly on the animal cruelty and the deaths of the animals in the film. And they focus on like the violence and stuff like that, which is understandable because that's all very surface level. It's kind of like, there's other films as well. I think Salo is another one, although that's a lot more art house than this is. This is not an art house film, although it has a lot of art house style subtext going on underneath it as well. Where, like you said, they didn't have to make this film good.
Yeah.
Didn't need to be
they
good.
Didn't need to,
Didn't need to be clever. Or anything, because I mean the underlying subtext of it. From what I've read up, Diodato wanted to make this film after news footage. So there were riots going on in Italy at the time, or there was terrorism going on, and he was concerned by the news footage because he felt that they were basically filming things and manipulating it to make it look like something that it wasn't.
Yep.
And so this is meant to be a commentary on that, as such.
Yeah, but. Well- I think the film, other than the fantastic filmmaking that we've already discussed, the social or political stuff in this film is amazing. Because basically, as I said, you're initially made to believe these are just some explorers, documentary filmmakers that have gone missing. And then when it's exposed that actually these are a bunch of dicks who are manipulating situations, creating in when they're talking about their footage in Cambodia or Vietnam and stuff, where they're saying they paid soldiers to act out executions or perhaps even carry out executions for the camera.
Yeah.
You're like, this is horrible. This is an exploitation film about exploitation.
Yeah.
This is a film about white people going around being quite colonial.
Yes.
And so when people accuse cannibal films of being racist and colonial, I'm like, well, actually, Cannibal Holocaust is kind of bringing up that issue and going, look how shitty we are to people when we come across them in the jungle and consider them primitives. You know?
Indigenous
how superior
peoples,
we think we are. And just, as you said, his whole thing about the riots being in Italy being filmed for sensationalism and the whole... the documentary crew doing the exact same thing. Mm. And then the TV company, knowing this full well, still wanting to go ahead with it. So it's just layers of social commentary, making the film not only cleverly made, but clever to watch.
Yeah, that whole aspect of it with the TV crew behind the scenes, the producers, we're going to show this footage. It's sensationalism. It'll bring lots of ratings. It's very Network. I don't know if you've seen Network. It's a Sidney Lumet film from like the late 70s. It's a great film. Absolutely amazing. Very ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. And there are certain aspects of Cannibal Holocaust that are very similar to Network as well that I think probably borrow from Network. And that's definitely one of them. Okay. So we've kind of skipped around it a little bit. Okay. We may as well go full balls deep into it. Animal cruelty, Tom. So what is your thoughts on animal cruelty in films such as this one?
Well, let's take the DVD. This is we were watching the Shameless edition of this film, which comes with two versions, I believe. because I think you've got the same one as me. One yes. with animal cruelty and one with animal cruelty removed.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, I was at a film discussion thing called Cine Excess, and they had the director as guest of honour. And they also basically they had a panel discussing censorship. And you had the director, you had a representative of the BBFC, and a few other people, film academics, basically discussing this film and censorship, generally speaking. And I came away from that thinking, I don't think the director should be allowed to have a version of this film without the animal cruelty.
Okay.
Because he made that, and if he doesn't like that anymore, that's tough shit. Because quite a lot of us don't like animal cruelty, and we never liked animal cruelty. And I feel like I'm a bit like having to go to the director, and I kind of am. The animal cruelty is obviously awful. I mean, I don't think anyone's ever going to really defend the animal cruelty. Like, yeah, you should be able to kill animals for fun. But back in the day, clearly they thought they could. Clearly, when he was making the film, he didn't think much of that pig. He didn't think much of that turtle. From what I understand, talking to you, the crew and cast were a little bit off with it. But they, you know, people still went through with it. And I would, even though, I mean, Greg, you know me, I'm a veggie. I'm not, you know, my position on animal cruelty should
not
be pretty straight.
You're not one of those people, are you,
Tom? People should be pretty straight. It should be pretty obvious to know that I'm not down with animal cruelty. But what I would say is films are time capsules of periods in time. And if we're uncomfortable with the fact that there's animal cruelty in this, I don't think there should be a version that removes that. I think it's almost a way of letting us know what filmmaking was like in the 70s or what Italian filmmaking was like in the 70s. So it should make us feel uncomfortable. I don't think you should take, if there was a film from the 30s or 40s where they had, I don't know, racial humor, racism, and nowadays they want to take that out. And no, don't rewrite history. If this film is uncomfortable to watch because of that, that's part of the film, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the opinion, this might not be a popular opinion, but it's my show, don't care. You can't judge the past by the present day standards at all, because then you're in very, very murky waters, as Video Nasties kind of stuff kind of showed. Because, yeah, something like Birth of a Nation, not the recent film called Birth of a Nation, but the D.W. Griffith film, Birth of a Nation, horribly racist. You can't dispute how racist the film is. Very, 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 very racist. But at the same time, it was a different period, and you could get away with doing those things back then. So yes, it was wrong, but at the same time, you can't then sort of censor it and all that kind of stuff. And it's the same with this. So with animal cruelty, yes, obviously it's very, very wrong to kill animals just for the purpose of making a movie. But at the same time, I don't know, like we talked about Mondo Carne. Yeah. Mondo Carne is the same thing. So this is just a progression from Mondo Carne. So because Mondo films were popular, producers in Italy, who are not exactly the most ethical people in the world, let's put it that way.
Yes.
They just thought, well, fuck, we'll just make these cannibal films, and they're popular with the working classes or what have you, so let's put lots of animal cruelty in our films. Mm-hmm. Now, what I'll say about this film, bringing it back to Cannibal Holocaust, interestingly, the BBFC only really cut one of the animal deaths, which is the first one, which is the Cotamundi, which is a sort of little furry creature that gets killed right at the start. That's pretty much cut out, but all the other animal deaths are kept in, which I thought was quite
very bizarre
because
that first death is nothing really in comparison to the others.
It's a man literally cutting its throat and it screams a lot. I think it's animals being killed and they're clearly distressed is what people don't like. That's why the turtle death is a weird one for me, because the turtle dies and the turtle doesn't make any sound, but it's still moving even when its insides are sort of all over the place. And it's very, very...
The turtle death is by far very disturbing. The most disturbing.
Oh, yeah, by
precisely far. Because you, as you're right, because you, not only can you not hear the scream, but as we discussed already, the use of music in that scene is harrowing. And I think for that reason, as you say, you can't rewrite history. It's in there. It's important to keep that scene in. If you're offended by that turtle being killed, good, you're supposed to be. It's a harrowing scene.
Yeah, it's meant to make the film crew look like shit.
Yeah, and I don't want to necessarily repeat myself, but as I have said, films are a little time capsule. That film tells you a lot, as you say, about attitudes at the time, just not viewing it as a film, but as a piece of history.
Yeah, social commentary.
You, and as you already mentioned, maybe there's an Italian perspective towards this in the 70s that you didn't get in British films. I don't remember a lot of animals being tortured in British films at the time. So maybe, it, you know, it tells you a lot about national cinemas. It tells you a lot about, I mean, you just always learn about the zeitgeist of, pretentious term there, zeitgeist of what's going on in society and attitudes by the films that are made. And if something made you uncomfortable, then that means that period of history made you uncomfortable. And it's good that we can talk about that. Once you start removing it, and I've got nothing against, I'm not saying you can't be offended. obviously you can, but because you're offended, that's precisely why it should be there. Because once you start removing things, the downside to that is you erase it from history, and that's not good.
Yeah. What I'll say about the animal cruelty in Cannibal Holocaust, though, is that unlike other cannibal films where it's just there for the sake of it and it doesn't serve any purpose to the plot whatsoever, like Mountain of the Cannibal God, I like Mountain of the Cannibal God, but the worst part of that film is there's a scene where there's a snake eating a monkey, and that goes on for about 3 minutes, and it's agonizing and it's just really, really horrible to watch. But literally, you could take it out and you wouldn't miss it. It literally serves no purpose to the plot whatsoever.
At least, I mean, I say at least. At the risk of defending animal torture.
Yeah.
When it happens in this film, it's normally done within the context of presenting these people as horrible. So when the pig gets killed, I mean, they kill the tortoise because they need to eat something in the story. In the story, they kill the pig just to basically harass the villagers. They kill their pig and start them burning. You know, it's all part of their sadism. That's why they kill the pig. So rather than just showing it, take Mondo Cain as an example. They're like, here's a shark getting shit put in its mouth to kill it.
Yeah.
A slow, painful death. And then, we're going to move on to the next scene. So those kind of animal cruelties are worse. I wouldn't say there's ever a good excuse, but there are definitely worse examples, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, all of the animal deaths in this are not gratuitous, I would say. That's probably the main thing I'm probably trying to say. I mean, the other animal deaths in it, so there's a giant spider.
Yeah.
But that's killed because it attacked one of the crew.
You know what's funny? I reckon there will be people out there who don't even think twice about the spider being killed.
Because it's a spider.
Who gives a shit? But a nice, cute little piglet.
Yeah.
That probably offends people more than the spider getting killed.
Yeah.
But that's a different thing entirely.
Generally, like furry creatures, like the monkey as well. So there's a monkey that.
That fucking monkey thing is the thing. Really? You know what I was saying? Like, oh my God. Like, you forget things when you haven't watched it for ages. Yeah. And I remember them eating monkeys, but I don't remember them cutting the face off.
Yeah.
And then they keep showing the face. I'm like, oh, it's a funny little leather face monkey.
Monkeys don't tend to fare very well in these kind of films.
Monkeys do not fare well, yeah.
I want to make a weird kind of devil's advocate argument.
All right.
Because I'm on the Wikipedia page, so I'm not coming up with this shit myself.
Okay.
This is kind of how sort of how organized I am for this show. Andrew DeVossi, the film historian, according to Wikipedia, has argued that the animal deaths have been harshly condemned because of the film's classification as exploitation, whereas animal mutilations in films perceived by critics to be art films are often ignored. And one of the examples they give is El Topo. Now, El Topo is a film that you really like, isn't it?
Yes.
And the cows, I believe it's, I haven't seen El Topo for a very long time, but it's cows who die in El Topo,
think so,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Or there are other films, like, so there are art house films.
Pink Flamingo's chicken gets killed on screen. Basically gets fucked to death.
Or in the Year of 13 Moons by Renner Werner Fassbinder, there's actual slaughterhouse footage at the start. So you can see cows being, throat slit and blood draining everywhere and all that kind of stuff.
There's definitely, there's definitely snobbery in the world of cinema where some things, and it's not just animal torture. You compare Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS to the Night Porter. Why is the Night Porter art and something else isn't? There's definitely a snobbery. The way I would tackle that is I wouldn't say that makes animal torture okay in these films. It means that it's not okay in art house films. I don't think anyone should get a pass, really, in terms of that. But yeah, there's most definitely a hypocrisy depending on how well accepted the film is by critics and art house alike.
Yeah. Are you making a film for money on a low budget and trying to make it as shocking as possible? Are you making an artistic statement?
All films are about making money. All films are exploitation. Oh. That's my view.
Tom, you're so cynical.
Nobody makes a film for free. Anyway.
But yeah, animal cruelty bad, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
sort of how we sum that up. Very, very brutal film as well. So it's not just the animals who get killed. In fact, I would say, arguably, the what happens to the natives or the documentary crew in the film is maybe worse.
I would completely agree with that. The most harrowing stuff. I mean, yes, the tortoise thing is always a bit grim, yeah. mainly because you see so much of the organs and inside, and it goes on for a while.
Actually died as yeah. well. These people weren't actually killed.
But I think the what happens to the natives to themselves, what they do to each other, is such a mindfuck. This is a horrible film to watch.
Yeah, so you got scenes of basically women being forced to have abortions with a stone, basically. That's pretty fucked up. That's probably the worst thing that happens in the film to me.
Yeah.
It's what's called social surgery.
Even the term.
Yeah.
You know, sinister term, what they use.
And again, it's. I think you brought this up already, but you could kind of... One of the criticisms we've made against the film is, oh, it's racist, because it's like showing these cannibals to be backwards and kind of blah, 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 all that kind of stuff, which I don't agree with necessarily.
Not in
the
this
reasons
film.
We've already
other,
said.
Other cannibal films, yeah, you could say they're racist. This one clearly presents the white people as sadistic colonialists,
yes.
and the natives are just doing things that come natural to them.
Yeah, I mean, not all the cannibals are presented in the same way, because there's three different cannibal tribes. There's the good cannibals, which are the Yakumo.
Yeah.
There's the very bad cannibals, which is the Shamatari, who
the
cannibals
people?
Pasted they're covered in black. They don't appear very much, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They're only in one scene where they're kind of brutalizing the other tribe, who are the Yanomamo,
mm-hmm.
who are kind of, again, they're bad, but not as bad as the Shamatari.
They call them that, because I'm never going to remember the names. But there's like the tree people,
yes.
the swamp people, and then just
the
people,
the others,
natives,
whereas the Yakumo presented as sort of very, very kind of gentle kind of cannibals. So I don't even think we really even see them attack anyone. They're kind of ones that are put upon, because
are they the ones right at the start?
Yes, they're the ones.
They even mention when you see them eating somebody, they go, "Oh, that's probably they're not proper cannibals. That's probably a religious ceremony." So even their cannibalism is kind of passed off as a, "It's okay, it's okay because
it's religious, right?
Yeah, it's a religious thing, you know."
Yeah, whereas there's again getting these names mixed. Yamamomo, they're the ones who are sort of slightly bad. So they'll pick on the Yakumo because they're a bunch of pussies, but they are at the war with the Shamatari and stuff. So they will kind of eat people, which is what happens to the documentary crew.
Yeah.
So they get killed by them. Like I say, they don't get killed by the really, really bad cannibals, because God knows what would have happened then.
You can tell, because they, as you said, they painted them like dark, black.
To kind of make them stand out a little bit. It's like, they real bad. Yeah, you don't really want to mess with them. Yeah, and obviously there's the famous image of the woman impaled on a spike.
Yes.
Which, incidentally, how they did that is the woman had to sit on a bicycle seat, and you had she had to put like this wooden sort of stick thing in her mouth to make it look like it.
What's amazing about that is how like she doesn't wobble or anything.
Yeah.
Like, she's pretty good at staying still, balancing on a bicycle seat with a massive stick in her mouth. And it's her body is so straight. That's the thing. No wonder people thought it was real. I look at it every time and I'm like,
they
it's
cut
so,
it at a certain
it's
point.
So straight. It's so straight. It's brilliantly done.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's like quite a lot of rape.
You know what? Even though her being impaled on the stick, I mean, it's on the DVD cover. That's the famous shot. But I would say there's three bits in this film which are in terms of humans, shocking. So yes, there's her on the stick. That's my least shocking bit. There's very early on, you see basically a woman being punished by being raped with a brick.
With a stone,
well, I say brick, sorry. A massive stone. That's pretty shocking. Followed by, you know, he makes something out of clay and basically brutalizes her with that as well. The forced abortion bit, that's my most disturbing bit. Less about the abortion bit with the stone, but more the, and spoiler alerts all over the place here. But the bit I find disturbing is it's not enough for them just to perform the abortion. They then take the fetus and just quickly bury it in some muddy clay. And that just, for some reason, that just freaks me out every time I see it. But they kill her as well. They smack her over the head with a rock.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, none of that was necessary. None of that was necessary. You know, it was all, oh man. It gives me a real shiver just even describing it.
Yeah. Although a very effective scene as well is where the documentary crew do kill a lot of the Yakumo tribe by putting them all in a big hut and setting it on fire and then pretending one of the other tribes did it, which is, again, I think it's the worst thing that they really do on film. Again, it's about, again, this is them sort of setting up, staging stuff.
As they mentioned before, in The Road to Hell, they stage things that, you know, so they just made up themselves.
Basically. And had
no qualms about doing it.
Yeah, and that's when you know they're really, really bad.
Yeah.
And I mean, if I was being critical, which I don't really want to, because I genuinely really like this film. I think this film is important
to give a balanced view.
But to give a balanced view, I mean, some of the dialogue's not great, to be honest. The characters are a bit two-dimensional apart from the professor. The professor is the best character in the film.
Yeah.
He's the moral center of the film. I think I've said this, again, I said this on the other show that I did about this. I think if you remade this film for some bizarre reason,
which I won't put it past.
Well, if you can remake I Spit on Your Grave, Last House on the Left, films like that, I'm pretty sure you can remake this film. Then I think what they would do is they would do it purely as found footage. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have the whole plot with the professor and stuff, which would be to its detriment, because that is the moral center of the film.
When you were describing fan footage films earlier, the big difference between fan footage films now and this is fan footage films now are just the fan footage.
Yeah.
There's no context. It's just, here's some things. Yeah, as you say, the professor glues the film together.
Mm. And yeah, as I said, he provides sort of the moral center. Mm-hmm. But as I said, I mean, I prefer, for lack of a better word, the second half of the film. There's some bits in the first half that are a bit cheesy. We did have people come in kind of while we were watching this film, and it was always when there was like fully naked men, fully naked women.
A bit Euro porn. Yeah, Channel 5, sort of like. And here he is splashing about in the water with the native girls.
Yeah.
You know.
So Robert Kerman, who plays the professor, he actually was a porn star.
Oh.
Before he appeared in Cannibal Holocaust. So he had no qualms with getting naked on camera. And obviously, look, I mean, it's Italian exploitation film from the 70s and early 80s. So obviously you've got female nudity.
It's going to happen. Yeah.
The only white female character in the film is naked at least three different times in the film.
Yeah.
There's one point where, honestly, she probably doesn't really need to be naked, but hey,
whatever. At one point where the two of the film crew are just having sex.
Yeah.
And then the other film crew just filming it. Doesn't add anything. And then later on, she gets really uppity about wasting film footage. Yeah. And it's like, film footage is getting wasted all the time, you know?
Yeah, but I think overall, as I said, I really like the film. I think it looks amazing. So the cinematography in this film is done by a guy called Sergio Defrisi, who is a cinematographer for Don't Torture a Duckling, or Dorkling, as I was about to say that. Now, it's quite interesting. Quite a few people on the crew of this film actually did work on Don't Torture a Duckling. So Diodato obviously really liked that film. So the writer came from that film. Cinematographer Riz Ortolani worked on that film. The production designer possibly worked on that film as well. The editor worked on that film as well. So, yeah. Lots of crossover in the Italian exploitation scene at the time. Now, what we're going to do at this point of the show is I'm going to rate the film. So I really liked it. I'm on the fence as to how to rate it, so I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5, because I don't think it's perfect by any stretch of the imagination, and I think there are better films obviously out there than this, but I think for, you know, this kind of film, I think it's the best by far. So yeah, absolutely, I'm going to give it a 4.
See, I'm tempted to give it a 5 out of 5.
Oh, I wouldn't blame you.
I don't know how this film could be better as what it is. So I'm going to
give it the full 5 out of 5.
First episode, I'm going to go straight in with 5 out of 5.
Awesome.
Horrible to watch. Very disturbing. Very depressing.
Absolutely.
But those are the emotions the film is going for. Very controversial. Socially, politically, it's very strong. I don't know how, as you said, if you were to remake this or whatever, I don't know how you could make a better version. I don't know how you could bump it up from 4 to 5. So I'm going to give it a 5.
Yeah, as a fact, you could probably get rid of some of the cheesy stuff, sort of in the first half.
Yeah, get rid of some of the cheesy stuff and kill less animals, obviously. But I'm going to stick to my guns and say 5.
Now, this is the interesting bit. So this podcast is obviously the worst date movies ever. So for all the films we're going to talk about on this show, we're going to rank them in terms of how bad a date movie they are. So from 1 to 5 again. So 1 being total Netflix and chill. Mm-hmm. So basically you could watch it and it would have no effect on your evening whatsoever. You would definitely be having a fun time after the film or even halfway through the film if you're that way inclined.
Or we're halfway through the film.
Whoa.
Yeah, go on. Yeah.
It's Netflix and chill, Tom. Or a 5 where they would just, whoever you were trying to, you know, get your end away with, will just get up and just walk out, never speak to you again, absolutely disgusted with you. They'll tell everyone you're a weirdo. Uh-huh. You know, all these things have happened to me, by the way.
It's a confessional, this podcast series.
So from 1 to 5, Tom, how would you rank Cannibal Holocaust?
I'm going to go straight in with 5 out of 5 again. It's a double 5. And not only is it a double 5, but I'm going to say it's a 5 for the exact same reason that I said the other one was a 5. It's depressing. It's fucked up. It's got animal torture. Basically, yeah. All the reasons why I think the film is great is all the reasons I think it's a terrible date movie. You can literally just copy and paste what I said and play it again.
Yeah. Now, I'm... Obviously, it's...
You could not get your end away halfway through this movie.
No.
It's impossible.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this a lot since I've known that we were going to do this. And on one hand, yes, I agree. Obviously, lots of horrible things happen in the film. Obviously, animals die. Mm-hmm. There's rape more than once. There's a lot of violent stuff happens in the film. But the film is, you know, it's not a piece of shit. It's not like it's other films where, you know, all these horrible films happen in the film and the film fucking sucks. And it's made for literally no other reason other than shock value. It has literally zero artistic merit whatsoever. Mm-hmm. This film has a lot of artistic merit in it. So I'm umming and ahhing. Oh, fuck it. I'm just going to give it a 5.
Like I said, man, I gave it a 5 in terms of being good. But just because it's good doesn't mean that it's a good date movie.
Yeah, I was thinking about this literally. It's like, well, I can't
I agree with everything you just said. It's got great artistic merit. I'm going to say that to every person who's never seen this film. You have to see it. It's got great artistic merit, but don't take somebody out on a date to watch it.
Yeah, unless this is the thing. So we call this worst date movies ever. But the thing is, if you're with someone who's really into these kind of films, it's going to be a great date movie. So the term is subjective, admittedly.
Okay, let's say that you go on, I don't know, some dating app and you type in, I like cannibal films, and they like cannibal films, and you go on a date. Even then, I would start off easier. You know, I don't think, even if you have shared interests, I don't think it's, I don't know, I don't see that happening, personally.
You go, maybe, I don't know, avocado women in the, cannibal women in the avocado jungle of death, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Something like that. Something a bit sort of more free and easy, less exploitative, maybe.
Yeah, and definitely no, like, going out for a meal afterwards or ordering a pizza. There's just, it really is going to put you off your appetite.
Yeah, so a very highly recommended film, maybe not a good idea as a date movie.
Maybe not.
To put it mildly. Just to, if you are interested in buying this film for whatever, you know, it's a great film.
Great movie.
It's a great movie. So if you want to own it, then, similar to what I've done previously, instead of focusing on the UK only, because this podcast goes out all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Worldwide.
It's worldwide, baby. what I thought I'd do is I'd tell you, based on DVDcompare.com, and my own personal experience and from my own research, so the better versions of this film you can buy if you wanted to own it yourself. So if you do want to buy it, there are two versions, obviously, that are highly recommended. So the version that myself and Tom own is from Shameless. We're based in the UK, but it's available on DVD and Blu-ray Region 0, so you can watch it anywhere in the world.
Fantastic.
However, if you are phobic to this kind of thing, it's cut by 15 seconds because obviously it is the BBFC and they don't like animal cruelty. Mm-hmm. Although they like animal cruelty in this more than I thought they would do compared to other films of this type, but hey, there you go. Mm-hmm. So there's that version. If you want it completely uncut, the best version to get by far, from what I understand, is released by a company called Grindhouse, which is again Region 0. Again, it's both DVD and Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about that version is it's got fuckloads of extras on it.
Way.
So if you like your extras, then basically that's the version to get and by
it
far.
Doesn't have less. Is it less cuts or no cuts? Or
it's totally uncut.
Wonderful.
So if you want it uncut, that's probably the best version to get. But if you want to get sort of, you know, pretty sort of bare bones, but not really kind of good version with, you know, the death with the cutamundi sort of cut out, then the Shameless version is a good one to go. Cool. So that's been the first episode of Worst Date Movies Ever. I've been joined by Tom and Dennett Cook.
Thank you for having me on. I've really enjoyed this date. Maybe there'll be a second date. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So Tom will be appearing for you in this series on a regular basis. You'll be glad to hear. So if you enjoyed the show, hey, great. We've got another show. I've got another show coming up very soon with Tom, which obviously you guys will know about in due course. I won't sort of spoil what that is. Now, if you want to get in touch with me for whatever reason, just let me know if you're enjoying the show, what have you. Then on Twitter, I'm at Worst Date Movies. So that's at Worst Date Movies. Now, we are interactive. So if you did want to contact me because, let's face it, this show, it's, you know, it's whatever people think would qualify as a worst date movie ever. Now, if you have any suggestions for films that you would like us to cover on the show, then yeah, hit me up on Twitter at Worst Date Movies and let me know what films you think I should cover. And you never know, I might actually cover one of them on the show. Cool. So thank you very much, guys. It's been a great show. I want to thank Tom once again for coming on.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you on the next episode of Worst Date Movies Ever.